Pleased to be chatting with 8th District Congressman Stephen Lynch on the program today about the unprecedented events in Washington yesterday. Congressman, good to see you.
Good to see you, Joe. I'm glad you are well.
Thank you. Likewise, as well. If you could briefly describe where you were and what happened when the protesters got so violent yesterday on Capitol Hill.
Sure. So we had a busy day at the Capitol. I had appointments in the morning on the Hill in the Capitol. And really this, it didn't all happen at once. It was sort of a slow rolling disaster, actually. We had an intrusion at the Cannon Building, and then there was some pepper spray. That was the first hint of things that were going wrong. I was over on the Senate side in the Russell Building when apparently what happened is when President Trump addressed the crowd and told them to get up to the Capitol and put pressure on the lawmakers. That's when the big rush occurred, and of course they plowed right over the barriers, right past the Capitol Police, and then, you know, with harmful intent, entered the House and the Senate chambers, interrupting the constitutional obligation for us to count the electoral votes. So, you know, a horrific day. You know, one woman shot and killed, three others with medical emergencies. I gather one of them also fell, but thankfully the National Guard came in along with the FBI and ATF and swept the building of the intruders and then put a perimeter around the Capitol again and reset the barriers. And so we were able to go back in late last night. We wrapped up around 4 this morning, but we were able to certify the elections. And, you know, it was important for us to get back in there and not be dissuaded or daunted by the attacks. It was important to show the American people that their votes counted and also that their democracy was alive and well. It's ironic because I spend a fair amount of time in countries that are sideways right now, you know, Iraq and Afghanistan, Yemen, Somalia. And part of the problem there is that during the electoral process, even Pakistan, it is typical that the losing party will say it was rigged and it was a scam and that the election was stolen. And each and every country where that happens, it undermines the integrity of the electoral process. It undermines the authority of the government. It undermines any hope of democracy that might emerge in that country. And to see our president, our sitting president, doing that on a daily basis, when in every single state that was contested, there were 6 lawsuits brought in Michigan. There were 5 in Pennsylvania. There were a half dozen as well in Arizona, Wisconsin. And in every single case, the federal courts in those courts, with Trump-appointed judges in some cases, and Republican-appointed judges in many, they dismissed all the cases for lack of evidence. And yet you had the president tweeting out that this had happened and that had happened, which was totally bogus and, you know, seditious in my opinion. But, you know, thankfully, we got the people's business done and we'll move on.
I know that initially you were asked about removing the president from office, and you thought that first it might not be good optically in appearance, but have you had a shift of heart since then?
Well, in 13 days, removing him, I don't think it's possible. Okay. And I don't think anybody really believes it is to go through. We just went through an impeachment process, took 18 months. The 25th Amendment process requires the cooperation of the vice president, right? He's the one that files the petition that the president is disabled and unable to perform their duties. So it's a stretch. Even if we had 6 months, it would be a stretch. We've got 13 days. However, I do believe that it's proper to send the right message So we have asked the vice president to file that petition. And we have asked members of the cabinet. The way the 25th Amendment works is that the president, with the support of the majority of the cabinet members, so 8 out of the 15 would have to support the petition. And then we would file a petition to say that the president is unable to perform his duties because of, you know, mental disability. So I don't think that can happen in 13 days. The president has rights under the program, under the legislation. He can file a competing petition that says he is indeed able to perform, and that whole thing gets into a fight. So which will take an enormous amount of time. However, I do believe that the president's conduct yesterday in sending a violent crowd of protesters up into the Capitol to disrupt the constitutional process of counting the electoral votes, in addition to being seditious, was, I think, demonstrative that this president is unfit to serve. And so I do think we should support a petition under the 25th Amendment against this president because of his behavior. It just was violative of the rights of tens of millions of Americans across the country. He wanted to just wipe out the electoral process. All of those votes in all those states were certified by the states, by the governors, signed off. And then they bring them to DC, and we're supposed to open up the envelopes and count them. That's our sole obligation here. So this president was trying to turn that around and end our electoral democracy. And that is indeed shameful. I also would support, renewing impeachment proceedings against the president based on his activity over the last few days. However, we know that that's an 18-month process. And again, we would rely on Republican members in the Senate to support that. And it doesn't appear at this point that there's enough to make that happen. However, I think the effort should be made. So I have signed on to an impeachment resolution, but it's uncertain at this point where that will go.
From what I've read about sedition, it does carry federal prison time if convicted. Is that something that could be imposed even after January 20th?
Oh, absolutely. And we'll have much more facts as to what happened, what was said. There's also a question around the Capitol security about whether or not Capitol police officers were permissive or in some cases sympathetic to the efforts of the protesters to get into the Capitol while the House and Senate were in session doing their constitutional duty. So all of that has to be looked at. And fortunately for me, I chair the Committee on National Security, which deals with the security of our federal buildings, the Capitol, the White House, the Supreme Court. So I'll have an important role to play in that. But we're at this point just gathering evidence. Last night when I went back to the Capitol after they had cleared it of the protesters, the FBI, the ATF, and National Guard were in there. It was a crime scene where the woman was shot in the Speaker's lobby adjacent to the House chamber. So we're gathering that evidence. Also in Washington, it is the most surveilled area with surveillance cameras of probably any spot in America. We have thousands and thousands of cameras that have been running constantly. So we will be able to get a frame-by-frame picture of everything that happened on Capitol Hill and across D.C. From, the critical time period, January 4th through January 7th, the time when the protesters gathered, who they were. We also have, obviously, the cameras from inside the Capitol, but we'll have a lot of good hard evidence to go after the perpetrators and also to reset the security protocols at the Capitol, because it's a dichotomy here, because, Joe, we want this to be the people's house. We want people to be able to come in, but we don't want them to be able to come in as a mob and not be able to protect the process and the members, right, and the employees. So we've got to dual role there that the Capitol serves. It's a workplace, but it's also the people's house. So we've got to figure out a way that embraces both of those functions, and we're able to give honor to both of those principles.
Congressman, where do you think the distrust of the process and the anger of some of the protesters is rooted in, where at least through the court system and the registration process, there's been no proof of any election fraud? Where do you think that these feelings are coming from?
Donald Trump. He's been saying forever that, he said 2 years ago, he said, if I lose my reelection, it's because this was rigged. So there it is. I mean, if he lost, he said it was rigged. And so he's just been feeding that out. You can hear people recite all this stuff, which is totally non-factual. The Georgia Republican election commissioner, attorney general, went through this whole process. The Republicans came in. They had their day in court. They had 6 days, six separate cases in court. Same thing in Wisconsin. All these cases went before judges, many of them Republican appointees. No evidence, lack of evidence that there was there was fraud enough to change the election. And so the governors certified the count in those states and sent it to Washington. So, it is misinformation. The stuff online is crazy as well. You've got groups of people that they're in an echo chamber. They repeat lies and to each other, and they're totally detached from reality. So, that's a real problem. I know that Facebook has just recently started to go out, and they'll put labels on certain tweets. This is false information, or this is disputed. They banned the president because he's pushing a pack of lies, unfortunately, but he is. That's shameful in itself that he would have to be banned from social media because he's lying. But that's what we're dealing with. So it's all this information. A lot of it's on the internet, and people are consuming it. And so that's the root of this. You would hope that people would be more judicious in where they get their information. It's a free society, and people can believe what they want, I guess. It's just important that there are also honest brokers like QATV that put the truth out there and bring in diverse viewpoints so that, democracy, debate is healthy. It's good. But, there's a line of truth that you would like to adhere to. And you hope that Americans are well-informed in their decisions. And I don't think they are right now.
Do you worry about the effects on future elections after this historic event?
Well, what's great, though? Quincy had a record turnout in the recent elections, both in September and in November. In the middle of a pandemic, the city of Quincy had a record, you could call it turnout, when people vote from their kitchens and their living rooms. That's still a turnout, right? And it's incredible. But I always thought that going to mail-in voting, the people who normally vote will vote by mail. But that was not the case. We had triple the normal turnout in some of the towns that I represent and some of the cities that I represent. So it was incredible. I got over 300,000 votes. I don't think I ever broke 100,000. Ever in my life. And I had a contested race in the final, and I ended up with 308,000 votes. I was stunned just at the number of people that participated. It really, really was heartwarming. So that gives me hope that people are voting, they're engaged. it gives me hope for democracy. But we are, it's a fragile democracy, and we have to make sure people are well-informed. And I'm blessed. I have a great district. I mean, you know, I've got three wonderful cities. I've got Boston, Quincy, and Brockton. And then I've got like 23 towns that are, you know, mostly down towards the South Shore, but also around Brockton, you know, Bridgewater, East Bridgewater, West Bridgewater. You know, just really a great, great district. I'm very blessed to be able to represent them. It's sort of an island of common sense, you know, just moderate, I think moderate Democrats, some moderate Republicans, a lot of independents. And I just, when I see what's going on around the country, you know, I just count myself very fortunate to be representing the families of Quincy and Weymouth and the other cities and towns in my district.
What do you think this disruption means for the incoming Biden administration? Although now that the Democrats will be in power in Congress, do you think he'll be facing an uphill battle along the way?
Well, you know, I know Joe Biden pretty well. My friend Marty Walsh was just appointed Labor Secretary, but today, just got off the phone with him. So Joe Biden, throughout his history, has been really a bipartisan person. On occasion, I used to see them travel. He would be traveling with other Republican senators, you know, Lindsey Graham and a bunch of them, John McCain back in the day. And he was always, you know, he was always of that mind that, you know, after you fight on the floor over your issues and principles, you could still, after work, go for a beer or you know, a meal with your adversary. And he's always been that way. He's not really a vicious partisan at all. So I think going in, he has a certain level of credibility with the Republicans already. He has served with them, and he has dealt with them in an honest way. So I think that helps. Plus his own nature, the way he is. I think he's very, very engaging. He cares about transportation and infrastructure, which is really important for Quincy and Mayor Koch. And I'm trying to push as much money into Quincy as I possibly can, because we've got some major, you know, MBTA issues there, as well as, you know, we've got stuff with the EPA and water issues and coastal issues and climate change issues. So all, you know, I represent that whole coastline all the way down to Scituate. So my goodness, we've got some challenges. So I'm really optimistic. I'm on the transportation committee, so that I serve on the water resources and environment committee, as well as aviation and rail and pipelines and all of that. So I'm really excited about being able to get some legislation done and get some resources to the cities and towns in the district to help them with the challenges that they have. But I think, you know, that type of issue, transportation infrastructure, is really bipartisan. And so we matter of fact, in the bill that we just passed prior to this election, we'll have to renew it in the new session. We took a lot of the priorities that Republican members had. They represent a lot of red state and rural states where there's inadequate broadband. So their kids couldn't do remote learning in some of these really small communities. So what we did, even though we're in the majority, we put the Republican requests into the bill for the first time in our nation's history. We put broadband in the transportation bill so that we would show the Republicans that we want to meet them halfway. We want to make sure that red states benefit from this. And, you know, it shouldn't be red state, blue state. It should be just, you know, the United States of America. So that's the thinking behind it. And I know that is completely in harmony with Joe Biden's approach to government. So I'm really excited about the opportunity to get some good stuff done and to help the Biden administration, the Biden-Harris administration, get off to a good start.
Does this disruption, in your view, you know, damage American democracy in the eyes of our foreign allies?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no question about it. I think the 4 years of Donald Trump damaged American democracy in the eyes of the world. Unfortunately, it was, you know, so I'm on the National Security Subcommittee. So I travel extensively around the world, and whether it was Africa or Asia or the Middle East, it wouldn't be the first question, but the second or third question from other leaders would be basically, what is up with your president, and why is he taking such a hostile position with respect to our relationships? And that wasn't just the Middle East. That was also Europe. That was Canada. For goodness sakes, Canada, Germany. You know, the Brits. You know, we haven't had better allies in recent years. They're with us in Afghanistan. They're with us in Iraq, and yet they were totally befuddled with the hostile attitude of this administration. So hopefully we can get back to a better place. The only thing worse than, I think it was Churchill that said that the only thing worse than fighting with your allies is fighting without them. And this is we're in a precarious position right now, and we have alienated some of our fast and longtime friends who have put their own sons and daughters in harm's way alongside our people, our sons and daughters in uniform, on behalf of democracy and human rights around the world. So we've got to get back and rebuild the trust that we've lost over the last 4 years, unfortunately. We've got to get back to a position of respect and trust in the eyes of the world.
You can't deny that Donald Trump has, millions of supporters across the country. So what is it that they are latching onto that they feel they're not getting from the Congress?
Well, I think he has tapped into their fears, right? He's tapped into their fears and been masterful in dividing the country. Some people are uniters and some are dividers, and he has capitalized on division and animosity. I think he's brought disgrace upon our country. I really do. So I'm hopeful that that President Biden will show us a different path on bringing out the common interests of the American people, on emphasizing the things that we share and respect and admire, those things we hope for our children that unite us. I really do. He's a good and decent man, Joe Biden. He really is. He'll have his moments, I'm sure. But I think he's a good and decent man, and I'm eager to support him.
What will be happening in Congress now for the next 13 days?
Well, to be honest with you, we're just trying to prevent the president. It seems he's become a little bit unhinged. Not a little. He's become unhinged. Sending that crowd up to the Capitol, and it's just not good. So we're trying to prevent him from taking any further harmful action against the American people or against our national security. We're concerned with his mental stability, and we're just trying to cordon things off so that that the Defense Department or the State Department or any agency of government does not obey any outlandish or reckless orders coming from the White House. That's the reason why we are proceeding with a petition through the Vice President on the 25th Amendment. We just want to send a signal that people need to be very cautious about what the president might do next. He's a danger to democracy. It's ironic, but the greatest danger to representative democracy today is sitting in the White House. We just hope for the best. We've got a lot of allies. There are a lot of good people on the Republican side who share the same fears. We've got to unite for the interest of the best interest of the country.
Has the Vice President indicated if he would support that?
Well, I have to say, I have great respect for what the Vice President did last night. He refused. First of all, when the president said, the Vice President's role was to open the envelopes and read out the results that were sent and certified at the state level by the governors. Okay, so the president put enormous amounts of pressure on Vice President Pence to change the tally or to to try to disrupt that process. The vice president, very thoughtfully, I think, went to Senate counsel, because he's you know, pro tem, and to the attorneys who handle that, and got a several legal opinions about whether what his role was and what powers he had. And then he followed the law. God bless him. You know, I thank him for that. But he refused to break the law. And it took courage for him to do that. He was lambasted by the president. He sent that crowd up there specifically to deal with Mike Pence, who was not doing the right thing in his eyes. But, you know, I'm happy that Vice President Pence had the courage to do the right thing in that instance.
Anything else you'd like to leave with us right now, Congressman?
Just to say thank you to the families of Quincy. You have no idea how proud I am to represent the city of Quincy and all the other cities and towns in my district. As crazy as things are right now, you know, I just think it's very, very important that their views, that their hopes, that their dreams are reflected on what I bring to my job in Washington, what their concerns are, what their priorities are. And I try to stay close. I know I've got a great relationship with Mayor Koch and the whole delegation, you know, Senator Keenan and Representative Bruce Ayers and Tacky Chan and the whole gang. You know, Ron Mariano, congratulations to him, by the way, becoming Speaker of the House. That was just a wonderful, wonderful gift to the people of Massachusetts, I think, having him named elected Speaker by his colleagues. A tremendous, tremendous asset to Quincy and Weymouth and Holbrook that he represents. So, and a great partner of mine. So, you know, I'm just very proud to be able to represent the people of Quincy and the families of my district down in Washington, D.C. And do not despair. With all the craziness that's going on, we got this. We got this. This country's been through far worse, you know, throughout our history. And we just have to stick to the principles that the founding fathers established and recognize that the liberties and human rights and individual rights of each and every one of us depends on the prudent guidance and operation of government. So that's the root of it. And that democracy is fragile if you look around the world. So we're an example, I think. We're a shining example of what's best about democracy. And we got to keep sending that message to every country around the globe and show them that it's a high-minded ideal to grant your people as much individual rights as you possibly can.
Appreciate your time, Congressman. It's really good to talk to you, and hopefully we can do it in person soon.
Yeah, that'd be great, Joe. Looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Stay well. Be safe.